Closer part comes from Madregas Adam, but also he was involved during the Six-Day War, together with many other Talmidim in the Meir Yeshiva, and he'd like to share his insights on that today, but to give you a different perspective exactly what Yom Yerushalayim is. Therefore, without any further ado, Tznu Kavod L'Torah of Baskovich.
Good morning, everybody. Brishus, my dear Yedidim, Shiva, Rabbi Sosevsky, Rabbi Wagner, and those Rosh Hashivas who are perhaps not here, I've had such an opportunity to host at Simchas from Talmidim in my shul, many of the Ramim here in the yeshiva, Talmidim of the yeshiva, we have in our own yeshiva, Talmidim of Or Yerushalayim. I'll tell you, this is a wonderful opportunity for me today. Rabbi Wagner mentioned that I will review with you or share with you some of the reflections I have from 42 years ago, having been here at your age. You're all about 19 years old. I was 19 years old 42 years ago, and I was stuck here in Yerushalayim. Not here, but I was stuck near the Mandelbaum Gate in Yeshivat Mir, which was actually probably the closest building to the border at the time that the Six-Day War broke out. There was an extraordinary sequence of events right in that place during those few days. No one has actually recorded it. It's never been written except by me. I have written not only notes, but I am going to publish this, and there's a lot of zichronos, some of them that I can share with you today, others I can't share with you today. The only thing I would amend was that there were not very, that, you know, we mentioned there were like other, a lot of Bokrim in Mir at that time, there weren't. There were very few Americans, actually in Eretz Yisrael, you didn't have many Americans pre-1967. I came in 1965. The Mir Yeshiva, any of you were ever Mir Yeshiva? You know the Mir, I think someone's got to know the Mir. They have a few thousand Talmidim. When I came to the Mir, they had seven Americans. We couldn't make a minyan Yontif Sheni. In 1965, didn't have enough Americans or chutzlars to make a minyan yontif. It was a very small yeshiva. So we had seven Americans, about 12 Yerushalayimer, about 21 or 22 Talmidim. That was the whole Mir. And then they had a koilel, which was about 120 Talmidim. Very small yeshiva. Six-Day War broke out. There were very few Americans. And I was one of those who was fortunate enough to remain. Let me begin as follows. There's an English word that if you don't know it, learn it now. I will teach it to you and you should use it for the rest of your life. It's a good word. It makes you sound intelligent if you know how to use it. And those are very important words. Words that make you seem to be maybe even more intelligent than one really is. That word that I use now is serendipity. You know what the word serendipity is? Serendipity, according to the dictionary, means as follows. You find a gift of something valuable that was not sought for. Got it? You have to find a gift that of something valuable that was not sought for. You didn't look for it. Serendipity. You're on a plane, a working trip. And it's bad enough that you're tired and not feeling great to start with. Now you find out you're sitting next to an old man that is draining your cup from the beginning of the flight till the end, and he's telling you all about his life, and he's kvetching, and he's crying, and he says he has no wife, and he has no sisters, and he has no brothers, and he has no mishpacha, and he has no children, he has no next of kin, and he's making you crazy. And by the time you get off at the end of the flight, he tells you also that he has $10 million, nobody to leave it over to, and you're the only one that ever listened to him, so he's leaving it over to you, and he writes you a check, puts it in your lap. Serendipity. That's a serendipity. That's a perfect serendipity. Let me tell you, in this generation, I'm a baby boomer, you are the children of baby boomers, so we're one generation, really are one generation. This is the post-Holocaust generation. In this generation, by far and away, the most serendipitous moment of all time with regard to the Jewish people, the most serendipitous moment of all time was the Six-Day War. And I'll explain to you why it's the most, and that's the word, you have to use the right word, it's serendipitous. You see, at that moment in 1967, before the war broke out in June, it was on a Monday, for months before, there were rumblings always troubled the Jews and the Arabs from 48 on. And Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was then the president of Egypt, he had organized pan-Arabism and organized all the Arab countries at the time, Syria, Iraq, not Iran. Iran was with the Shah, they're not Arabs anyways, but Iraq and Syria, even Morocco, Libya, Egypt, of course, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Jordan he schlepped in, everybody, he organized a pan-Arabism, and they're all 100 million Arabs surrounding 1 million Jewish people, and there was no Tzahal. Tzahal was not even a myth then. Everybody thought we were still, Tzahal, they called it Tzahal at the time, was an extension of the Haganah. If you know what the Haganah was in Mechemet HaShichrur, it was a riffraff group of dedicated people, Moshe Nefesh, to protect Yidden, and they wish to make God to the Shema, so they won. It wasn't a great army. Nobody knew Israel had an extraordinary air force. Nobody thought Israel had weaponry. Nobody knew that Israel could even win a battle, forget about a war. And it was a far-gone conclusion. Now, here's what happened. For 2 months, 3 months before, the world was riled up, the Arab world, and now they were publicly saying the same things that the Meshuggah from Iran is saying now, that he's going to eradicate all the Jews, not just eradicate them. The word was then, the famous word, we're going to push them into the sea. We're going to drive them into the sea. And the propaganda, and Russia was backing them, and the communists, and it kept building and building and gaining momentum and getting scarier and scarier. They closed the Straits of Tehran. There was somewhat like of a boycott. Israel could no more use the waterways, and it was getting tighter and tighter, and it became obvious that a war was going to break out and Israel would be overwhelmed because they were small and tiny. The question wasn't like this. The question wasn't if they would win or lose. They would lose for sure. The question wasn't if they would live or die. They would die for sure. Everyone's going to die. The question is, how would you die? Would they die as heroes? Would they die as sheep? Would they die as soldiers? Would they be slaughtered? How will they be killed? Will anyone be saved? But it wasn't a question. Anybody in America will tell you. See, one individual from California, at that time you were also like I was, and we all, what were we mispalled for? We were all mispalled the same thing. Sure, Kraroy Xardinenu, because we knew all the Jews in Israel were going to die, but please spare some, or how? But no one expected anything but death. There was, you know how bad it was? It was building to a crescendo, as I was telling you before. The war broke out on Monday. Now I have to skip a lot. They don't have that much time. But as things got more tense and more tense and more tense, we realized that in days the war would break out. We didn't have enough tachrichim. There were no tachrichim for everybody who would die. What are you doing? There's no tachrichim. How many tachrichim do you think they have now in Eretz Yisrael? You think they have at any given time more than 10,000 tachrichim in Eretz Yisrael? Tachrichim are shrouds. When you bury a dead person, al pidin, you have to wrap them in tachrichim. Tachrichim probably in the whole tahara process, according to halacha, when you bury a Jew, that's the most important. Tachrichim is even more important than a tahara. People don't realize it. Tachrichim is a chiyuv. You have to have shrouds. You bury a person in shrouds. Didn't have. You don't have tachrichim. How many people die in one day? How many people die in 5 weeks? They were expecting 100,000 deaths, maybe 200,000. So we were making tachrichim frenetically. In Meir Shorim, by the Rabbah al-Hasidim, became the Merkaz HaTachrichim, and they were begging young yeshiva bokrim, anyone over the age of bar mitzvah, should come in and help make tachrichim. So we should have enough tachrichim. Body bags, they were making actually in where Mevaseret Tzion is now, somewhere around there is where the army used to produce them. So they were producing body bags. They didn't have enough body bags. There were things like that. It wasn't all about ammunition and strategy and defense. It was about preparing for the worst. And let me tell you, when I was like you, 19 years old, I was reckless, just like all of you were reckless. You know, besides being youthful and exuberant and optimistic and looking forward, but there's a certain recklessness that youth possesses. I went to the airport on Wednesday before the war broke on Monday to leave. And I went with my grandparents, actually, of Rabbi Yaffin, the Rebbetzin Yaffin. They're older, 80s. In their 80s, we sent them back to the United States. And I got on the plane. In those days, you went to Lod, and you didn't have like passport control complex. Now you waved a passport, and you went past the guard, and you walked up the steps to a plane, and you sat down. The plane went off. So I go up the, and I put on the seatbelt, and I put on their seatbelt, and then I just stopped in the middle. I tell the person sitting next to me, I remember a Rabbi Teddy Adams. Do you remember Teddy Adams? Rabbi Teddy Adams. And I said, listen, you know my grandparents, they're going to freak out when they hear that I left. But I lived with these people 2-3 years here in Israel at that time. I can't leave them. Leave them to die and I run away? I'm not going to do it. I'd rather stay here and whatever happens, happens. And I actually took off the seatbelt. And I walked off the plane. I left my baggage. Everything was on the plane. And I walked back to Yerushalayim. I didn't have tachbura. There was no tachbura then. Because the army had commandeered every vehicle that moves, even a horse, in the donkey that you have, whatever it is, they commandeered every one of them. Anything that moved, they commandeered. They didn't have anything in the army then. So there was no tachbura back from the airport. The only way you get to the airport, you had to have a yeshur. If you had a ticket, they would provide, the army would provide. I couldn't get back. I had a hitchhike this. It took me almost a day to get back to Yerushalayim. It was impossible. There was no way, nothing that was available there at the time. Nobody could help. So back in Yerushalayim, I remember that Saturday night, the miklat in the Miri Yeshiva was not a real miklat. We had to put sandbags because it was halfway, it was like a dining room, halfway above the ground, halfway on top of the ground. And we're getting more, and we're going till 4 o'clock in the morning. They're telling us, more, quick. The army's saying, this is a terrible miklat, no good, you need more on the windows. So remember, we didn't have enough people to help us do it. So some of the bachurim, we didn't have shovels, didn't have enough shovels either. So there were bachurim that are taking sacks, right, to fill them with sand to put them on the window, using their hands. So you take a sack, you'll hold a sack, and then you'll go with your hand and put it, and then you switch off. What happens when you do it for 2 hours? What happens to your hands? They're cutting, they're bleeding. I remember the bachurim, all the bachurim, their hands were pieces of sticker flesh were on the hand, because we had to get them up quick. Because if you didn't have the sacks on the window, shrapnel comes in, that's not a miklat. And a lot of people realized, probably that's where they'll have to be. So there was a sense of urgency. We were frightened. We were scared. I remember coming back. They couldn't believe it. I came back. I remember Reb Chaim Shulevitz, when I came into the yeshiva, he says, you're gone. You were supposed to leave. Why did you leave? Why did you come back? So I said, I came back to Vasidan. He says, you know, this is Misa L'Chaim, Chaim L'Misa. You didn't come back, Stam. It was really putting your life at stake at that time. Let me tell you, the war broke out on a Monday, Sunday afternoon. Now, this is very important to note. The yeshiva went on. The yeshiva was learning the Dorin. In the Mir, we learned very, very well. I don't think any of you, or some of you might know the name Reb Nochum Partsavitz. This is the son-in-law of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. As a Goyen Adir, at that time, him and Reb Shmuel Rozovsky were considered the biggest Magide Shurim, the Black Shirt, all of Eretz Yisrael. Goyen, really, a Goyen Muflag, a Goyen Adir. And he would say his shiurim, and it come from all over Eretz Yisrael to hear his shiurim. Shiurim were extraordinary, very deep, very tief shiurim. And he would say his shiurim on Sunday. The metach was terrible, but still, everybody sat in yeshiva. They went to learn. Sunday morning, he would say 12 o'clock, he said the shiur klali. So he got up on the bima, and he started to say the shiur at 12:30. Those of you who've been in the mirror, did you ever see the windows? In the small windows or big windows? Giant windows. The windows are the whole side of the. It's like a wall. The whole wall is. I don't know how it is today. Maybe they changed it. They rebuilt it. It's still the same. That was the mirror. Remember, it used to be all they had was the big windows all over the wall, and the windows were facing Shmuel HaNavi, which was the border of the Jordanians. So how far away were they? 600 yards, maybe. Yeah, no less. Maybe 300 yards. So it was 1,000 feet away. That's all. In 12:30, in the middle of the shir, all of a sudden, just like we're standing over here, just like I'm saying it, that noise, machine gun started firing in the middle of the shir, and the windows, some of the windows start breaking, and glass spritzing all over you, ricocheting bullets, ricocheting all over, and everybody instinctively, you jump to the ground, you jump to the palafis. The only one who didn't jump to the ground on their belly was the Rosh Hashiva. He froze on the bima. So I still remember, Ara Yoim, I was sitting in the front, because I was the sofer. I used to write the shiurim. As he used to say, he used to tape the shiurim, and a few bachurim would write the shiurim. I wrote the shiurim too. So I remember reaching up, still, with my finger, and putting my finger in his tie. And there was another Yugamana, David Freiman, grabbed him by the frack, and we yanked him to the ground. And I remember, and I pulled him on my own stomach. Two of us dragged him on his belly all the way to the back where it's out of the line of fire, and then lifting him up. And then nothing, then we all ran down to the miklat. This whole thing, how long did the whole thing take? A minute, maybe 60 seconds, maybe even less, maybe 45 seconds. But you hear the glass and the break and the ricocheting and yelling and the screaming, and then we run down to the miklat, and we're in the miklat, and everybody's wiping themselves off, and whoever got glass and is taking off the glass and wiping their face, and everybody, you're saying to each other, are you okay? All of a sudden you hear a shot, bang, like just like that. And we thought again it was a shot, so everybody got scared. And then we saw Rav Nachum stand there, and he said, "Oh, bechalt as the Rambam halt nicht azeh." And the Meir darf min zogen, and he went out and finished the whole shir. I had a very big atzlach. I forgot to bring it this morning. I apologize. I brought it with me because I'm speaking tomorrow night, actually, in Mir at Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel's house to review all of the stories that I'm telling you now, many more. The whole. So I brought my machberet. I was lucky enough. For some reason, I was also scared. So I must have kvetched my notebook like this real hard, and I had it with me with my pen, and it's like this. I'm holding the machberet. So quickly, I opened it up, and I scribbled one thing in English very quickly: guns, 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 guns. And then I wrote the rest of the shiur. And you know, I always used to say my zeder of Rami Affenzacher and Sarah Livrocha. He once said a beautiful pshat that it says that the Kohen Gadol, it was never allowed to be metamet to his kroivim. We're all kohanim. Your kohanim are allowed to be metamet to a father, to a mother, to a brother, to a sister who wasn't married, etc., etc. To seven kroivim, they can be, not a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol can't be metamet. So everybody says, why is it? Why shouldn't the Kohen Gadol be allowed to be metamet to a father, to a mother? So he offers the pshat is because. It's in Sifra, it says that the Kohen Gadol, whereas every Kohen has to feel that he's always Lifnei Hashem. That's a special Kiddush of a Kohen. They have to feel the Lifnei Hashem. Kohen Gadol, when is the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh Kedoshim? When is he in the Holy of Holies? How many times a year? Only once, right? But he's Lifnei Hashem. He's Lifnei Hashem, Bifnaya, Bifnim. The Sifra says that the Kohen Gadol's chiyuv a whole year, the Yishunev Hesach Hadas, is to feel like he's bifnayu bifnim inside the Kodesh Kedoshim a whole year. Somebody that has that much of a chiyuv on him that he should have no Hesach Hadas from Hashem and Avoida, like he would be in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Imagine how you would feel if you were in the Kodesh Kedoshim. You feel like it. So that you can't even have if you have to mourn a father and a mother. That will be mafriya. That will take you away. You have to have the Kohen Gadol have to have the strength of character not even to let the death of a father and a mother interfere with the Lifnei Hashem Bifnei Bifnim Tamid. Okay. So he writes that who's today? There's no Kohen Gadol. The only Kohen Gadol are you. Because after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Ein Lo Elah Kodesh Baruch Hu Ela David Amish Shal Lachim Blevad. So this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You're the Avoda B'Kodesh HaKadoshim when you sit and learn. So we're all like Kohanim Goyim. So he wants to give a shmuz to the Bachrim. So in the middle of learning, if somebody comes over to you and he tells his Rosh Shamabika some silly thing, some mundane thing, how can somebody do that? He's you must see a das. You're now supposed to be doing the avoda of a Kohen Gadol, and now some silly mundane matter interferes and makes the Hesach Hadas. That's his point. See, he says, he remembers in yeshiva, this goes back in Europe, there was a guard in the yeshiva. There's a guard there too, from the Russians, from the communists, had a gun. In the middle of Seder, the gun went off. Everybody, the gun went off, they got scared. One bacher, he says, he remembers in yeshiva, even during the when the gun went off, kept chuckling, learning like nothing. And biologically, it didn't penetrate his ear. Because he was so shakua in his learning that nothing was able to be mafriya. He wasn't hesach hadas anything at all. He says that takes a tremendous koyach hanefesh. I always thought that was my Rebbe then. When he continued right away, he gave the clap and he said, the Rambam holds, he didn't miss, not even he didn't miss a beat. He continued the sentence that he was in the middle of when we pulled him downstairs. That was a certain greatness that you saw at that time. There are other stories in the Miklat. So what happened is, now I'll fast forward you. So now we're Monday morning. There seems to be some disagreement, but this is the way I remember it. 8:30, the sirens went off. because at that time nobody knew it yet. We found out later from BBC, and then we found out later from all the historians, that the Israelis had done what is now the famous preemptive strike, and they sent the whole Israeli Air Force to El Arish, and they banged out and knocked out all of the Egyptian planes, and there was no more air force for the Arabs. And I have to tell you, you all know this alone, whoever dominates the air dominates the ground. And therefore, at that, before we even knew there was a war, already from a technical standpoint, not that Rabbeinu Shimon made nisim, from a technical standpoint, everything was done already, was finished, and the war was over. Israelis will win this war. Okay, but we didn't know. Now the azaka goes off, because the war is official. The azaka is the, how do you say azaka? Sirens. The sirens go off, and we're all running now. Everybody's running into the miklat. I remember this. You weren't allowed to go into the miklat of the mir. The worst place in all of Yerushalayim to be was the Mir Yeshiva, because the Mir Yeshiva, not only was it close to the border, in those days you had no satellites. How did the army communicate in those days? How did anyone communicate? Antennas. You had to have antennas for all your communication equipment. Where did you place antennas in those days? Where? High places. What was the highest building then in Yerushalayim? The Mir Yeshiva. So the army had staged their whole command center on top of the roof of the Mir Yeshiva. And the Arabs knew this, of course. So their whole objective, when the Jordanian legionaries, who were the fiercest fighters of all, by the way, the Egyptians ran. They left their shoes and ran in the desert. And the Syrians fought pretty well. But the fiercest fighters of all were the legionaries from Jordan. They were fierce fighters. They knew their objective was to go to Mir. The army beforehand had civil defense Haga people standing by the door. Mir had no doors, by the way. Mir Yeshiva, there were no doors, wide open. You know how wide it was? Like from here to here. There was just a wide open opening. There was not even a door to close. And how far away were the Arabs? I told you about that. Was it 100 meters, 200 meters, whatever it was. If they had the upper hand for 5 minutes, the Arabs had the upper hand. They made the first push. I have to tell you, the Arabs and the Jews, In the war, Jews lost 635 people, 212 in Yerushalayim, 147 of them in Givat HaTachmoshet. You know what Givat HaTachmoshet is? Ammunition Hill. Ammunition Hill is next door to the Mir Yeshiva. That's where they were fighting hand to hand. All infantry, Sanchanim. It wasn't infantry, actually. It was Sanchanim came down, and it was hand to hand fighting. For 7 hours, they were fighting Givat HaTachmoshet. That's how fierce. Because whoever had, that's where Kever Shimon HaTzadik is. Anyone was there? That whole Shetach then was empty. That was Givat HaTachmoshet. And whoever won that would dominate the first neighborhood of Beis Yisrael. Would be the first neighborhood that they would overrun. They knew, the soldiers knew. That's a lot of them fell. A lot of young 17, 18, 19-year-old kids fell right there. I mean, Sanchanim, some were a little older, but they fell right there. They were told that there's a shechita. If you don't win right here, there's going to be a terrible shechita within a few moments. They would overrun not just Mir, the whole Beis Yisrael neighborhood over there would be overrun. It was terrible. It was a terrible thought to begin with. So I'm running, and the city didn't want anybody to Mir. They wanted them to go to other miklatim. So I still remember going up the steps and want to come into yeshiva, and I see all of a sudden there's about 150 or 200 women and children, all svardim, all poor, because it was, you know who lived in that neighborhood then? Chilonim. None of them from around the Mir. There were no datiim kamat in those days. That was the poorest neighborhood, and these were all new Sephardi immigrants who were very, very poor, had no money. Only thing was, they had no husbands. All these women had babies and no husbands, because all of their husbands were in the army. Who was the only one not in the army? The yeshiva guys. All of them were in the army. Now all these women, they come and they want a miklat. So they all come running, and they come to the yeshiva. They're standing there, and the Haga guys, the old guys, you know, still they're standing with their muskets. They didn't even give them guns. They didn't have enough guns. They give, you ever saw the Revolutionary War? You had those muskets. That's what they gave them. They should look like guns. Look, it was make believe. But they were standing there saying, "Atem lo yekolim lekanes po, sakana hachi gdola po ba miklat, ze lo miklat, shama ze miklat, po ze makom sakana al tikansu." And they're yelling, and they're saying, and the Haga's not cooperating. So this, I remember, listen to this. I said this on Kol Nidre one year. I remember a Sephardi woman, a very small and thin, this lady. A tiny lady with three babies. One baby one child she was holding here by the hand. The other one, she's holding a baby under her arm. The other one was a child holding her like over here. And this woman was at the top of the steps, everyone behind her. And she's yelling at the old guys from Haga. אבל למה אתה לא מבין? למה אתה לא שומע למה שאני אומר? אנחנו רוצים רק בישיבה. רק בישיבה אנחנו רוצים, לא רוצים מקלט, אנחנו רוצים רק בישיבה. These are חילונים. They said, now they all thought they're going to die. Where do they want to be? Yeshiva. They want to be in yeshiva. That's what they say, the foxhole. What happens in the foxhole? Everybody becomes religious or something in the foxhole. Everybody wanted yeshiva. You know what? After a minute or two, the guys from Haga understood. They were, what am I wasting? They're right. And they said, let them go in. 200 came in. There were only about 40 Yidden over there. They were in, Rav Nachum Partsavich was there, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz had yard sale. Then I say, I have to finish soon, so you'll pardon me. There's a lot I would share with you, but I have to jump a little bit. Let me give you one or two more incidents that are important. Here's what happened. At 11 o'clock, till 11, we didn't know what was going on. Israelis turned off all the radio, and they play music. Only music. That's all they had. No news, no commentary. That's the law of the land. Martial law. Only music now. The only thing is they stopped the music every few minutes, and they would go, Sheva, Abba, Shalosh, Shmone. And that means that certain soldiers knew they have to go and where to report. They were all simanim. But that's it. And music was playing. That's all. We tried to get BBC. That's all we could get. Again, those days it was bad communication. You didn't have, like today, all your mission with the satellite phones. No phones, you didn't have phones and things like that. So it's 11 o'clock. We're not sure what's going on. 11 o'clock, all of a sudden we heard like this. And then you hear a little later again. You know what that was? They had started shooting mortar fire from about 4 miles away toward this neighborhood. They had a whole division of a mortar, engineers, army engineers, the Jordanians, and fire, whatever you call them, shooting mortars, and now aiming them, trying to get them to their targets. It was very primitive. You know, you couldn't. It's like they shoot the rockets today in what's the name of the city? Sherot. They don't know where to shoot. They shoot, and then they try moving a little this way. And 11 o'clock, so we knew they had started shooting totachim. They call them totachim. And you hear very little. At 12 o'clock, you hear, it was like this. Why? Thump, thump. Why two? Because it would always shoot out two. So that when it hits, the first one made the hole, the second one went through the hole and exploded. That was the kunz. So you always heard it both. As they were getting, you know, kept moving, getting closer, so you'd hear, thump, thump. And then you'd hear, it really made the noise, just like on television. It really made the noise, and you'd hear it would come in, and then you'd hear, you know, it would explode. You'd hear double explosion, and it started getting closer. This went on from 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday morning. You know what that is? That's like, to explain, like 16, 17 hours of pounding. Now they kept getting closer and closer. As it got closer, there were a few indirect hits. They hit the balloon of gas. I don't know how you say that. Gas, you have, you know, for eating, for the gas that goes to the refrigerator, to the stove, you have balloon. I don't know if they have it today. But it used to be like, you had tanks of gas and like propane tanks. And that's how all the stoves work. They had them outside the yeshiva. They hit those. And all that gas came into the mikalat, and that also was a cause of everybody thought they're going to maybe get gassed to death or explode. And these are incidents through this relentless bombarding, and it was getting and louder. And then the building ground was shaking, and it's really picking up. And it got to a crescendo. It was we at about 2 at night or 3 at night. Rabbi Arya Finkel brought us to our attention that we're going to start saying vidui, and we all said vidui together. We said tachnun. He said we should say the tachnun pasik b'pasik. And after we said the whole tachnun pasik b'pasik, then he was like, just like on Yom Kippur, we said Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. You had 300 people, 250, 300 people saying together, and Bom Sheik Void Malchus and Hashem Elokeinu. We really said the vidui, and the building is shaking. That's famous. That direct hit on the mirror. This is after the direct hit. There's a piece, you go to the Mir Yeshiva, you come in where you come into the Migrash, the main place, and you'll see it's like the bricks on top. They never fixed it. They wanted it should be for perpetuity. It goes like this, and then a dip, and about a dip is about as big as this window, let's say. That was the direct hit. When the building was hit directly, everything, the whole infrastructure began to shake, and all the everything, rocks are coming down, and the paints, everything's coming down, and you think every second, what do you think is coming down next? Everything is coming down, and we're yelling, Hashem, 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 and everybody knows that we're going to meet our Maker now. Now is the time has finally come. And it's not stopping, just because it was a direct hit. You hear outside, the tanks were going in the street, and you hear the foot soldier is running. You hear the rat-tat-tat-tat from machine guns. You heard all the shrapnel banging against, you heard banging against the building all the time. It was just built on you. It wore you down. This is, so about 3 o'clock, an aluf, a general, comes in, and he says he has to speak to the leader. Who's our leader? Chaim Shmulevitz. Chaim Shmulevitz was deaf, for all you don't know. Couldn't hear. So we brought somebody else over, was a mitargein, and he told him, here's the deal. It's very bad now by Givat HaTachmoshe. We lost over 100 soldiers, he said. It's slippery with blood. We don't know who will in the next hour prevail. If we prevail, everything will be good. It will take 1 hour. But if they are going to prevail in the next hour, they're going to come into this building. If they're going to come into this building, you're all going to die. So this is what you got to do. He says, at the edge of the building, at the other side, was the dining room was this big. He says, there, at that corner, I want you to take a sledgehammer, they brought a sledgehammer, and make a hole about so big. And if you make a hole about so big, when they come in, the Arabs, to kill everybody, at least some of the children will be able to sneak out and run away, and some of the women might be able, as many as you can, ward them off. This way some can be saved. That doesn't sound good. When he tells you that, you feel very, very... It wasn't a happy moment. That was not a happy moment. So let me tell you, then he says next. He turns to the young men. How many young men we have here? So we had about 17. He says, okay, put 17 little petek in a yarmulke and write numbers. And you pick about 1 to 17. And the one who's number 1, he will die first. He will stand at the top of the steps. Number 2 stands next. Number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, number 7. So when the Arabs come in, I want you to break the little wooden chairs. They used to have. Break the wooden chairs. At least hold a piece of wood in your hand. You take your wood with a knife. You want to make it a little sharper. So for a split second, when the Arab comes with his gun or whatever he has, at least you'll stop him. So you'll stop him for one split second. He will kill you, but that will give somebody a chance to escape. Then the next one, each one is another second, a few more. And we made the girl. And everybody made the girl. There was a number 1 and a number 2, and I had the fortune not to be 1. It was number 7. It's not good to be number. It was not a lucky seven. 7 was in the Mir Yeshiva. My place to stand was when they came down the steps. It was by the Netilas Yadayim. In the Kedaroka, there's a Netilas Yadayim station at the bottom of the steps. That's where I had to stay. So you know, you say Hashem Aleichem, you know, with Vidui. At that moment, that, you know what happened from that? With this, I close now. I know you have to go to breakfast. I told you before, serendipity. Hashem Yisbarach at that moment snatched victory from the jaws of defeat for Klal Yisrael. He snatched Chaim from the jaws of Misa. By all rights, everybody thought, in Chutz Laretz and Eretz Yisrael, we're all going to die. And what happened at that moment, listen to this, not only did we live, all I asked for Hashem at that moment was, I was so unselfish, I was so not greedy, it was maybe the least greedy moment of my whole life. You know what I asked Hashem Yisbarach for? Just to live. I didn't even want a car. Can you imagine? I didn't even think of a car. Not nice clothes. All I said, I want to live. You know what Hashem did? Not only did he take away the hovering death of Klal Yisrael, but he threw into our laps something that for 2,000 years every Yid would cry every day, and he never gave it to anybody. And that was the last thing on our mind. And he threw right into our laps the serendipity. He gave us the Mokum HaMikdash. He gave us Eretz Yisrael. He gave us Kever Rachel. He gave us Hebron. He gave us everything. We did in our dreams. Nobody in their dreams. We didn't. Not we didn't want it. We didn't believe it. We didn't know it could be. And all of a sudden, it was there. It was ours. You know how? You want to know how serendipitous it was? You want to know how much? They announced on the radio on Wednesday. Till Wednesday, you couldn't go out of the miklat. On Wednesday, they said you can go out, but don't, because it's dangerous. There are snipers. But do you know what it means to go stir crazy? When you're 3 days in one place, you start going insane. You have to leave. So there were, I told you, a few other Americans with me. They got out. We're going. And they say to me, Moshe, let's go. We're going. I say, you're crazy. You have meshuganers. It said in the radio they have salafim. They have snipers are there. The salafim will shoot you. They will kill you. These are Jordanian legionnaires. They're Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim. They're waiting to die themselves. But take a Jew with them. Are you a nut? You're gonna kill yourself because you have to go for a walk? No, we're not going for a walk. We're going to try and go to the old city. We heard the old city. I said, now you're in Gaza, Meshuggah. You want to go to the old city? You can, no, you can go. It's open. The Tzahal is now in Hebron. It was wide open. You can go into the old city. I said, oh, by the way, I want you to know, I was down in Eretz Yisrael almost 3 years. You know, the whole it was a different Eretz Yisrael. I had never had, for example, Coca-Cola. Didn't have Coca-Cola then. They had only a Tempo. They didn't even make it in the Middle East. The only thing they made in the Middle East was Pepsi, but not in Israel. You know that Pepsi used to observe an Arab boycott on Israel? Only the Arabs had Pepsi. The Jews didn't have Pepsi. It was like a different Israel. I hadn't had a Pepsi in 3 years. All of a sudden they say to me, come, let's go to the old city. You know what? You can get a Pepsi. I said, oh, a Pepsi? I'm coming. And I actually risked my life for a Pepsi. How do you like that? That's the best commercial of all time. That's the best. I really did. I went out on Wednesday to see, I didn't find it because they actually didn't let us go. They let us go close to Shar Shechem, but not close enough. But just to give you an idea, you know, the magnitude of it was a redemption, but not redemption in terms of where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and makes a geula. That's not, I'm talking about a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave us the most beautiful matana. The only thing was that when we got this matana, I wish that Kol Yisrael would have been smarter, and they would have known that when it says V'yishavta betach be'artzachem, it says it twice in the same pasuk. Kemat in Bechukoy it says Ushmarta bes mishmarti, and it says Ushmarta bes mishmarti V'yasisim es chukoysai V'yishavtem betach be'artzachem, and the next pasuk is V'nos da'artz espiria V'yishavtem betach be'artzachem. So they all ask, why does it have to say twice V'yishavtem betach be'artzachem? Says the first time Hashem gives it to you. Maybe you did mitzvahs. Yes, it's obvious he gave it to you. But then when the nas na'aretz piriyam, when the aretz is good to you, and it takes you and it accepts you and it lets you build and it lets you live there and it lets you enjoy Eretz Yisrael and it lets Americans come and it lets yeshivas blossom like they never blossomed before. Period. Where you had in my time 28, 29, 30 yeshivas in all of Eretz Yisrael. Now you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of yeshivas. V'nos na'aretz is period. You need another bracha v'yishavta betach be'artzachem. Shouldn't give it away, not to give it away, not to throw it away, and also to maintain the schusim that we need to keep it. You don't get it for nothing. Shem Yisbar gives it only if you earn it, the old fashioned way. You have to earn it. That's the cry of all those people, the lament of all those people who were there then, who we look back 42 years later. I look at you, you're all young, you're at that moment. This is just as pivotal. You think this is a less pivotal moment in the history of Eretz Yisrael than my time? What do you think? You think you're all less in Sakana? But let me ask you honestly. Do you really think that there's a less of a Sakana now than there was in 67? That you are all facing? You have that Meshuganer from, I never can say his name. How do you pronounce, you know what I mean? The Iranian Meshuganer. And then Amachmahad or whatever, Mamashmahad, whatever, and others, and there's really nobody to depend on except Rakhav Vidush Hashemayim. There is a concerted effort that it's a very, very ugly and underhanded, both political and economic and military from all sides. You see, Asif Sayyid Ali Yankiv, Kol Yisrael. It is a very, very pivotal moment for this for Eretz Yisrael. Very pivotal. It's not about politicians, because it doesn't make a difference. Prime Minister, Shmai Minister, this whole Narishkeit. It all matters the same thing that always mattered. It matters in Klal Yisrael, how they're odot b'mitzvahs in Torah and in Yerushalayim. And we need schusim. We need tremendous schusim now. But I'm telling you, having gone through what I went through, you look at things in a different perspective. I take it 42 years later, the sakon is just as big. I just hope that, you know, you have opportunities to rise to the occasion, to make things happen. It's the young people. It's the young people like you that can be poide, the Klal Yisrael, from the sakonas that it's in now. I hope that you should have siyata d'shmaya, that your future should be as sweet as the future that unfolded for me in the subsequent 42 years after that moment. You should see even a sweeter future that should be subsequent to this very difficult moment now. I let you all go. Just let me say, for my own business, I'm here on business and pleasure, I am the Rosh Hashiva of Madregas Adam. I don't know who's going to Queens College. Is anybody here going to Queens College or thinking of going eventually? You don't have to tell me now. But if you do, I'm going to leave some brochures here. I have, you know, usually loads of the guys in Queens College are by us now. We have about 80 boys. And if you're interested, anybody wants to speak with me or a little information, by all means, and the Rosh Hashivas will be able to tell you too. Thank you for listening. I appreciate very much. Pleasure. It was a pleasure.
Baruch Cohen is
Baruch, yeah, Baruch, one of my guys.
Take something.